Here he is, Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch on Robin Hood Radio. And the question man. What was that? What was that called? Mr. Answer, Mr. Question Man?
Well, this is Arthur. And first thing I did in my career was have a question and answer column at Newsday. This is, I hate to say, 1970. And it was called Feedback. I named it. I thought I was very clever at the time. This column lasted through way beyond my time at Newsday, which ended in 1979. And I don't think they still have this column, but maybe they do. I don't read Newsday anymore. But it was a great column, and because it taught me everything I know. No, that's not true, not everything. But I learned so much because most of the time I didn't have the answer to these questions, and I had to do the research. So nowadays, I love to answer questions, and you can write to me at mmiles, at Robin Hood Radio. And some of you have, and I hope will continue to. Meanwhile, I'm having some mobility issues, so I'm looking for chores that I can do sitting down when I have no pain sitting down. Little by little, I'll polish all the silver in the house and the brass, but I need to cook a little too. So yesterday I decided I was going to make chili powder. I have a lot of chilies. I am fortunate enough to live next to a Mexican community, and there are several Mexican groceries in that community, one of which has every chili known to Mexicans, which is a lot of chilies. And you can buy them for relatively nothing, although, you know, soon we're going to be paying 25% plus on those more on those chilies, probably. Anyway, I through experimentation, I came up with a little formula for making my own chili powder, because the chili powder you buy in a supermarket invariably contains both oregano and salt and sometimes cumin. I have a friend who can't eat cumin. He dies, literally, if he eats cumin. So I would never keep that around. Somebody who I feed every once in a while. Anyway, my chili gets rave reviews, even from, I have to say, my Mexican housekeeper, who thinks it's totally not Mexican, which it isn't. It's not Mexican. It's American. But anyway, back to the chili. So through experimentation, I came up with a little formula for making my own chili powder, which is very easy, and you can do it sitting down, which was a blessing yesterday. Now, I put four kinds of chili in my chili powder. So it's a blend of low heat but fragrant, fruity even, tasting peppers to very hot peppers. My basic pepper is a guajillo, G-U-A-J-I-L-L-O, I think I did it right, guajillo pepper, which is medium heat. It's not very hot at all, actually. I don't know the Scoville numbers on all these, but all peppers are measured in what's called a Scoville score. And one of the least, just to give you an idea, one of the least lowest scored peppers are poblano peppers, fresh poblano peppers. When you dry a green poblano pepper, first it gets red as it ripens, and then it gets leathery and dry. And so I use guajillo and ancho. This is for one, let's call it a dose, for one batch of powder. I often make double or triple at a time. But for one batch, you use 6 guajillo. I'll tell you how to handle them in a sec. Not a big deal. 4 ancho. Anchos are much bigger than the other peppers, so 4 is enough. Then at least 4 morita peppers, which are hotter than the last two, but not very, very hot, not very hot at all. But they have a very beautiful, flowery, fruity flavor. And then I put in a hot pepper, maybe two of something very hot, unless you like your chili very, very hot. But you can always add something at the end, I'll tell you what. So, four ancho, six guajillo, did I say four morita, the fragrant one, the fruity one, and then two of some very hot pepper, whatever you have, wherever you want, could be the, but let me just say, here's a rule of thumb, the larger the pepper, the sweeter it is, the smaller the pepper, the hotter it is, and this last pepper will be a small pepper, however you like it. Now, these are all dried peppers, and I keep them for months and months because I don't, you know, they go far, and months and months in my storage jars. And for most part, they last for months and months and months, even over a year. But when I was making this yesterday, I realized some of the peppers had probably were over the hill. So when you go to buy your peppers, make sure that they all have intense color. They should not be brown spots on them, or they should not look faded. Those are old peppers, and you don't want very old peppers. I do not roast my peppers for making powder. With the scissors, I cut off the stem end. Sometimes the stem end will just break off. Guajillos often, they just break off. But I use the scissors, and then I cut the peppers down the middle and shake out all the seeds, or at least most of the seeds. I mean, if you get a few seeds in there, it's not a big deal. But shake out most of the seeds, discard the stem ends, and the rest of them put in a bowl. And then I use, to make my powder, a Krupp's coffee grinder that I must have bought 30 years ago, and it's still going strong. Actually, I have two Krupp's coffee grinders. They're very inexpensive. Last time I looked, it was like maybe $20 on Amazon, but could be more by now, but not more than 30 for sure. Anyway, I have one. My black one is for coffee, for actual coffee, and I don't grind coffee every day, but I keep a grinder in case I do need to grind coffee. And then I have a white one that's for spices. These days, it's mostly for these peppers, but I sometimes have to clean it out with all the pepper residue that's in there. And the way to do that, to maybe grind up another spice, for instance, coriander or cumin seed, or I don't know, whatever, you're going to grind, whatever spice you're going to grind, the thing to do is after you take a paper towel and wipe it clean, put in a tablespoon of sugar and run the sugar in the grinder, and that'll pick up the residue of whatever was in there. So I grind the peppers, some a few at a time, in my white Krupp's coffee grinder, and when it's very fine, I pour it into my chili jar. So the thing is, some of these peppers are easier to grind than others, and in my grinder, in my experience, I have to do on and off pulse a few times at least, before you can just keep the plunger down and grind to a powder. And a little technique there. By the way, it works. Now, the reason that I don't toast my peppers or whatever to make them, they say, more fragrant, is because my peppers get cooked a long time. When I make my chili is super simple. I saute onion, let's say a medium for 2 pounds of meat, for 2 pounds of 80-20 chopped chuck, that's, you know, not very lean. It's sort of a little bit fatty, which we like in this case. I saute a medium-large onion, diced, in vegetable oil, neutral oil. It doesn't have to be olive oil. In fact, I don't want to introduce the flavor of olive oil in here. So neutral oil, and when the onion is tender, add your chopped meat, breaking it up. I mentioned last program that I use a flat-ended wooden spatula for that. It really works well. So I chop up the meat as it's cooking over medium-high heat, and I keep turning the meat. When it's all sort of lost its raw color, it's an old instruction I remember from old recipes, when the meat has lost its raw color, you can add your chili powder. I use a rounded, but not piled up high, but just slightly rounded tablespoon of my homemade chili powder per pound of meat. If you like a stronger tasting, go ahead. But that really is sufficient, a rounded tablespoon per pound of meat. You'll make it this way the first time, and if you'll decide that you want it more intense, and remember, you're going to get more intense chili flavor as well as more intense heat if you add more chili powder, and this is very intense chili powder to start, you'll have to be a judge after you've made one potful. This is my formula. So, and I don't make it too hot because Bob won't eat it if it's too hot. Anyway, even with my medium hot, he wants sour cream on top, which, by the way, dairy products are the perfect foil for chili. Don't try, water doesn't do it. If you have trouble with hot food, in the case of a bowl of chili, you can have a big dollop of sour cream on top. But if you accidentally, say, eat something really hot and you need to quell the heat, milk. Have a little bit of milk. Anyway, after the chili is incorporated and you let it cook in there for another minute. Oh, I put in a lot of garlic. Either when I put in the meat, I put in 5 or 6 large cloves of garlic, chopped. Doesn't have to be too finely chopped, but finely chopped. Stir that in. Stir in your chili powder. Stir in a tablespoon, but this time a flat tablespoon, level tablespoon, of cumin powder, or ground cumin. Not home ground. I buy it in the supermarket. And later you're going to add some oregano. I happen to have, and you can buy Mexican oregano, but I happen to have it because I have a Mexican housekeeper whose mother just visited and brought us oregano. Anyway, the Mexican oregano is stronger than Mediterranean oregano. It does have a more punchy oregano flavor, and I like it, especially in this, but it's competing with chilies and onion and garlic. So to this mixture of meat, onion, garlic, chili powder, and cumin, you will add 1 28-ounce can of plum tomatoes. I like to mash them up first, either squeeze them into the pot or when the can is open. I sometimes just take the potato masher, and which fits into a 28-ounce can, by the way, and get the mashing going in the can. Pour that into your meat. It should, the liquid, the tomatoes, crushed tomatoes. By the way, if you're really lazy, add a can of crushed tomatoes, 28-ounce can of crushed tomatoes. And they don't have to be San Marzano in this case because tomatoes are a secondary flavor here. Anyway, put in the tomatoes. It should just cover the meat or a little bit more. And this you're going to let simmer for a good 45 minutes to an hour. And about 15 minutes before you're going to finish cooking it, add a big tablespoon of oregano, depending on what kind of oregano you decide how much. I use a rounded tablespoon of my very strong Mexican oregano. As I said, the very strong flavors competing with each other here. I think chili tastes better after it's been sitting for a while. So I wouldn't even mind like making it in the morning and then eating it in the evening, but even better would be to make it, and once it cools down to a reasonable temperature, put it in the refrigerator overnight. In fact, I make big batches of chili because I like to freeze it. It's something that freezes perfectly, and sometime a meal will come along, and what are we going to eat? We don't want to order anything in. There seems to be nothing else to eat. And, I've got chili in the freezer. So, and we're always happy to have chili. You can make something to garnish it with. I mean, there are a lot of things you can garnish the chili with. We like a salsa of chopped scallions and tomato. I don't put in coriander because Roberto doesn't need coriander, but I don't miss it, actually. I sometimes zip mine up by putting in a little bit of crushed Calabrian pepper that I always have around, which is really, really hot. I put that in my serving. Actually, I made just a couple weeks ago what Southern Italians often call olio santo, holy oil, which is red chili oil. And to do that, you do nothing but I just crush a few of my dry Calabrian peppers. You should not use fresh peppers for this, by the way, fresh hot peppers. They really should be dry, because what happens is the fresh peppers get moldy, even in the oil. And put your crushed dried peppers in, and you can even use pepper flakes, you know, that you know come in a jar, but I happen to have these nice peppers. Crush them, put them in a little jar, top them off with either hot oil, or I've discovered, just put them in the oil and then do 30 seconds in the microwave, and that's it. And then you get oil that's reasonably hot. Or you can make it hotter or less hot by how proportion of peppers to oil. And my friends in southern Italy, some of them keep this on their dining table, you know, salt, pepper, and olio santo. And you use olio santo quite a lot, because if you're eating pasta and beans, or even just beans for that matter, or pasta for that matter, you drizzle some of this over to taste. I'm laughing to myself a little bit because we have an old friend. He's old. We knew him when he was a teenager, and now he has teenage children himself. Anyway, he first time he came to the States, he brought with him his own hot pepper because he was afraid he was not going to find peperoncino in the New World. But, of course, I had to tell him it is actually from the New World. All the chilies are from the New World. They're not from Europe, even though Europeans use a lot of different chili peppers. You know, let's say paprika comes in different strengths from Hungary. You know, in fact, you can buy at my farmer's market here in Brooklyn, we can buy Hungarian paprika peppers, which are really good to stew, not just to make into powder. And by the way, in the south of Italy, in Calabria, which is famous for hot pepper, they make, and they call it paprika, which is, you know, and you can buy it in the store. You know, it's already ground, dry ground red pepper. So I've been getting questions. That was what I spent my Sunday morning watching upsetting political shows. But the whiff of hot pepper made me steady. But I got a question this week, which is a really good one. How do I make easily hollandaise sauce? Now, hollandaise is a funny sauce. It's part of the mother, it's one of the mother sauces, which includes bechamel. Anyway, I'm not going to do a lesson in classic French mother sauces, but definitely hollandaise is up there. And, you know, I realized when thinking about this that I am accustomed to eating mechanically made hollandaise. You go to a brunch restaurant and get your eggs benedict, or any of these benedict dishes. They have, you know, lox benedict, which is substitutes smoked salmon for ham, whatever. They top it with hollandaise. You think they're making this all by hand in the kitchen? No. Of course, classically, pre-blender, before there was such a thing as a blender, everybody had to make hollandaise by hand. Now that we have blenders, I'm guaranteeing you that your favorite brunch place is making it in a blender. So the thing is that the texture of a hollandaise is different if you make it in a blender and then you make it by hand. And if you want to try your hand at it, you're welcome to. But here's my blender version. So what is hollandaise? But an emulsion of butter in eggs. Mayonnaise, its sister sauce, is an emulsion of oil in eggs. And, of course, depending on what oil you use, will be a different taste to the mayonnaise. Mayonnaise is, when I make it anyways, is flavored with lemon juice. Could be vinegar instead, but I prefer lemon juice. And I use a tiny bit of mustard. Not much different than my hollandaise, which I was making all the time when I was on the keto diet, because of course with keto, you have to think fat, good ways of having fat. I have to say, hollandaise is not one of the best ways to have fat, because you're basically consuming egg yolks and butter, two very, very high saturated fat foods. Too high cholesterol food, but we don't worry about eating cholesterol. We worry about the fat. So it should be a treat. Hollandaise must be a treat, unless you're on the keto diet. Then, of course, it's a mainstay. So here it is. Three, in your blender jar, break in three egg yolks. To that, add the juice of a half a lemon, or about a tablespoon of lemon juice. I would say a scant quarter teaspoon of Dijon mustard, a few turns of the peppermill, and a big pinch of salt, and whirl that in the blender until everything's very well blended. It only takes a few seconds. Now, I have an old-fashioned blender. Don't ask me how to do this in your new-fashioned blender. I really don't know. In my old-fashioned blender, which is literally 70 years old and still going strong, although I've had to replace the jar. The cap on the jar has a hole. You take off the knob and there's a hole for doing exactly what you're going to do, which is incorporate into your base of egg yolks one half cup of butter, melted butter. That would be one stick, 8 tablespoons of could be salted butter. It doesn't have to be sweet butter, but I always use sweet butter. And you know what? Just melt it in your microwave. It's the easiest thing. And you put, I still have Pyrex 1 cup measures, those nice little cups.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I mean, I've had them my whole life. I've never even broken one. So I have a couple of them. I put the stick of butter cut in half in one of those Pyrex cups. And it's also very good for pouring, as you know, and melt the butter. The butter should be warm but not hot. And whirl the egg yolks and additional ingredients in your blender. And as it's whirling, little by little, stream in the butter. When you get about half of the butter in, you're going to see it becoming an emulsion. Get it all in, and that should be it. You want to eat this when fresh.
A lemon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. I put more lemon in. I like a lemony hollandaise. And so chances are I'm going to be using a whole more tablespoon of lemon juice. Also, you want to taste for salt. So those are the only two things you'll have to adjust for, lemon and salt, and that's up to you. So if you want to make it ahead, don't. You can make it maybe a half an hour ahead.
Not much
ahead. And the only way to keep it from separating is to keep it in tepid water, meaning put the whole blender jar in a pot that has tepid, or a big bowl that has tepid water, not even hot water, warmish water, warm-ish.
That's a good idea.
And that's it. And, you know, it's great on vegetables, great on your eggs. If you're on the keto diet, it's sort of great on anything, but not bread. And you can't make eggs Benedict if you're on keto, because you can't have the bottom part. But you could make just ham and eggs with hollandaise, That's not a bad thing at all.
You could make scrambled eggs with hollandaise.
Absolutely. Listen, you can just eat hollandaise with a spoon.
There's no end to it.
Once you start doing this, and you see how easy it is.
Yeah.
Now, I just don't know about these new blenders. They run so fast, I don't know how that works. But you can make, of course, you can make hollandaise by hand by just beating and beating and beating with a fork in a shallow bowl. I like doing that sometimes. I never make hollandaise that way, but I do make mayonnaise that way sometimes, just because I like the action of doing it. I had another question that I thought I should answer, and then I have to say goodbye, but... I mentioned that this TikTok thing that I discovered, instead of using butter to make fried eggs, you use cream. 2 tablespoons of cream in the bottom of a small skillet, get it hot, break in 2 eggs, and cook them until they're done to your taste. My taste is a runny yolk. However, I got a question. Can you do this with half and half and add a little butter? Listen, you can do anything you want, and I'm sure that would be delicious, but it's, you know, the whole point here is two ingredients, a little cream
the whole point.
And the eggs. But the thing is, I'm sure that the listener who wrote this to me probably keeps half and half in the house, and she never has heavy cream. I would try it with the half and half, and forget about the butter. You just sort of like poaching the eggs in half and half. What could be bad?
I don't know.
I prefer eggs poached in tomato sauce. But that's it. Anyway,
wasn't there? I somehow think that I'm going back to the TikTok thing for a sec. I somehow think that there was why do I think it was French? It might not have been, but an egg recipe where you literally did the eggs and cream.
Well, I did the eggs and I've been making eggs and cream for 1,000 years. It's an old Elizabeth David recipe. Elizabeth David's been dead for 100 years, not quite. But anyway, I met her once. But anyway, she was a famous English food writer.
Elizabeth
to those
David,
who don't know the name.
She
after World War II, she got the Brits to discover food, other than their poor food themselves. Anyway. She used to put, I have done this so many times, you put some cream at the bottom of a custard cup, break an egg into the custard cup, and bake it in the oven. Same idea. And you can add some herbs to that.
Herbs, season it, stick it in. When you do something like that, do you put it in a bath? Or do you just...
I put it on a baking sheet so I can handle a few at a time, but... No, I don't do the bath.
Yeah.
No, it's just very easy.
Very
cream,
easy.
Egg, salt, pepper.
All right, and it's time to wait for next time to say much more.
Okay, so everybody, right. Have a Super Bowl is over. Next, I guess Valentine's Day is the next.
Yeah, so have a
happy Valentine's Day.
Have a happy Valentine's Day. Love to Bob. Have a good week.
And too,
we
guys.
Will look forward to talking to you next time. This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch on Robin Hood Radio.